people makes me nervous, you know? So,
we're here 'cause we love you.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. And I, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, this morning, and I'm like, you know, you guys have, most of you have seen me get sober and seen, like, the worst of things that I did and everything. There's my sponsee. We can start now. You're right in front, girl. All right. Is this on? Is that?
Okay.
All right. I'm Kindred. I'm an alcoholic. most of you, a lot of you have heard my share, so I'm going to try to see what I could do about that. I got until, what time do I talk till?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock? I mean. All right. Yeah. This is the Kindred meeting. You know, I'll just start what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I was born. That was a problem. I was born to an alcoholic dad who was sober, and a mom who was an Al-Anon. And my dad used to go to the Al-Anon meetings to go find the hot chicks, you know. So he found my mom and. And then he found out shortly after I was born that she is bipolar schizoaffective. And so they divorced pretty quickly, and my dad got full custody of me, and my mom was kind of in and out of my life. You know, I haven't seen or heard from her since I was like 14 or something like that. But, you know, so it was just me and dad, you know. And he brought me to meetings and passed me around the room. I was the cute little baby, and you know, and you know, he eventually kind of stopped going to meetings, and so you know, I got to kind of experience what it was like to be around somebody who was dry. And you know, I could say that now he's passed on, but you know, it was a lot of control and that kind of stuff, and I picked up a lot of messages that. You know, God was this all-powerful thing, but also something that would just save me when, like, I was in a bad place. So I can remember when I was a kid having a bad dream, and Dad would say, you know, in the middle of your nightmare, ask Jesus to help you, you know, and I would, and I never had a nightmare again, and things like that. And he taught me the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer and, you know, saying my prayers before bed. But I just kind of got this idea that, and this was my own perception, that God was there to rescue me if I was having a nightmare, or if I was in big trouble, there was, you know, something going to look out for me. But that was kind of the extent of it, you know. And, you know, as I grew up there, I had all the feelings that we all have. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to, you know, like be one of those crowd. I wanted to, you know, I was always in fear of things. I had a lot of anxiety and stuff. And you know, I don't know if that made me an alcoholic, you know. I went to school for addiction studies. And, you know, there's all this top scientists and everything that study us, you know, and try to figure out what makes us, you know. Is it hereditary? Is it environmental? Is it something that we can change and make not happen, you know? And they don't even know, you know? So I don't know what made me an alcoholic. I know that when I started drinking, it was just kind of like everybody else had already drank. I wanted to experience what that feeling was, you know? And I heard stories in AA growing up that, you know, drinking was fun, drinking was partying, drinking was an experience to have, and you can have all this excitement or whatever. And so one day at the Christmas table after Christmas dinner, I was at my godparents' house, and everybody, like, drank these half-full glasses of wine, like, left half the wine on the table, you know, and they'd set it down, and then at the end of the dinner, I was like, hey, I'll clean up the table, you know. Why don't you guys go hang out, watch TV in the other room? I'll do all the dishes. I'll do everything, you know. And of course, I drank them all, you know, red, white, it didn't matter. And so, you know, and so that was my first experience. And the next time I drank, I knew I had to drink more. I mean, I don't know where I learned that, but I got to drink more because I want that experience. I want to feel what that feels like, you know? And so, you know, my disease progressed really quickly. You know, I went from always trying to be this perfect kid, you know, to like, I want to be, you know, I want the right dress and, you know, look cute and all the adults love me and all that stuff to, you know, by the time I was 16, I was homeless. I dropped out of high school. I was living in my car in Fairfield. I was running the streets. My dad was chasing me, trying to find me and, you know, before his little Al-Anon experiences and, you know, and I was hanging with 40-year-olds and, you know, convicts and just, you know, just crazy. And I didn't care anymore. And all my sense of morals and all my sense of like, you know, I want to be, you know, one of this crowd, it just didn't matter anymore. Alcohol had become my master, you know. And I can remember those days. It was just so, you know, like I would have these spiritual experiences, you know, like, and they would be these moments of clarity where, like, I could see this life, you know, I kept feeling like, am I going to do this forever? Am I going to be like these grown-ups who end up in prison and do this for the rest of their lives? You know, like, I kept hitting these barriers that, like, am I going to cross this line now, too? Am I going to start, you know, I mean, I used some accelerants, I call them. And, you know, and so they were using their accelerants in other ways. And I kept going, well, am I going to try that next? Am I going to do that next? You know, and so all the lines that I had, put up for myself that made me like a lifelong, I'm going to be an alcoholic, I kept crossing, you know, and so at 17 or 18, I started getting in trouble a lot with the law and getting pulled over and going to jail and, you know, and stuff like that. And again, it was like, if I ever this, that'll make, and I would, you know, it just kept happening, you know, and so I'm sitting in jail for, you know, I don't know, maybe the third time or something. And my dad and my godfather, you know, the two, Rocky, they had actually talked to the judge and said, can you keep her? You know, can you keep her? Wrote a note, you know, like, please, you know, because every time she gets out, she just gets worse, you know. And so that was my first experience of like, you know, there's no strings to pull. There's no more codependence, you know, and thank God I didn't have any more codependence to help bail me out again, you know. You know, I'm really tough on my stepkids, and because of that, because that was the pivotal moment where it was like, you know, if I had somebody else to help me, I don't think I would have got this, you know, and so I spent maybe 6 months, and that was kind of my first experience of, you know, AA, and they came into the juvenile hall, and I had this big moment of fear that happened where I had almost died when I got arrested. I had this infection I like to call crankle-ankle-less. It was actually cellulitis, and it like made my head swell up. It was crazy. And they had to do like a surgery in there. And you know, they said, if you would have been out there one more week, you would have lost your sight or your hearing. Another 2 weeks, it would have went to your brain and you would have died. And I said, well, okay, that's enough of that. Like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm cured, you know? And so I AA came in. I started going to church on Sunday. I started reading the Bible. I got released to a clean and sober house. I was like, well, on my way, I'm going to do things right. You know, I was 18, and I met up with some guy in the clean and sober house, and, you know, he was married, and I started hanging out with him, and went trucking up to Reno and seen one of my old friends. And, you know, I was really determined to be sober now. You know, I had been doing like all this work spiritually, you know, and I was going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and I wrote her name on the board and like didn't call her or anything, but I had her, and I started going bowling. Like, I was really going to do this thing, and you know, and I got a job and I started hanging out with the guy. And, you know, it's funny, like, I had no no cleaning house happened. You know, I wasn't working the steps or anything, so I was still kind of doing some of the same behaviors, like, let me hook up with the married guy in the clean and sober house, you know, and let me, you know, see what I can kind of get away with. Let me not really show up to work on time. Let me, you know, whatever. And so when I went trekking up to Reno, I seen one of my old friends, and she offered me whatever I liked, and I picked up again. And I had no mental defense against that first drink. It was just right back to it. And I told myself, it'll be different this time. I'm going to do things different, and, you know, I'm going to, like, get loaded right, you know? Like, I seen my aunts and uncles and stuff do it, you know? And, like, Floyd, like, people who could, like, do it for a long time. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to stay in one house and not get arrested. I'm going to, like, you know, eat every day. I'm going to drink water. I'm going to shower, you know, like, I'm going to make this last, you know? And I did. I mean, it lasted for a while. And, you know, so one day I'm at the house, and this guy comes walking up to the house, and he's, you know, got no shirt on and covered in tattoos and got a snake around his neck and long hair, and yeah, comes rolling in, and, you know, like, he was the stud, and that was the man of my dreams right there, you know. And he had a girlfriend, but I got rid of her. And you know, we started hanging out tough, and he made the thing that I liked. And, you know, it was just like I was going to have his babies. Like, we were going to get married. We were going to do all this stuff, you know. And I mean, 3 weeks later, he was arrested and sent back to prison, you know. And he got released a couple of weeks later on something called a new thing called Prop 36, you know. And I was like, you know, you need to get sober. Cause I can't deal with that, you know, the whole you in jail thing. So I'm going to drag you to Benicia, you know, here's this guy in Benicia, and bring you to meetings and get you sober, you know. And, you know, they got like sponsor and the stuff that you can do, and you can go to your meetings, and I'll just hang out with you and, you know, get you sober. And so we would sit in the back of the room, and I'd cross my arms and look at all the women and make sure nobody was looking at my man and he wasn't looking at none of y'all, you know. And and I was mean, you know. I had, Sue remembers, like, slicked back hair, Terry too, like, black eyeliner as my lip liner, and we're all tough, you know, like, just, yeah, I was, like, ready to fox at any moment. And then I got this little puppy, you know, and everybody's like, oh, look, cute puppy. I'm like, grr, you know. But that little puppy, I called my sober puppy, because it broke the ice with people, and people started approaching me and wanting to talk to me, and I'm like, okay, you know. And so, you know, he got a sponsor. He started working the steps. He started getting happy, joyous, and free. The light started coming on. He started getting excited and pumped about this program. And, you know, and he got his driver's license. He never had a license before. And you know, meeting with this parole agent, like doing all this stuff that was like great. And I'm sitting here getting crazier and crazier. You know, I'm just getting madder and madder at everything and everybody. I would come home from the meeting just raging, you know, and, you know, again, it was this, you know, feeling of desperation. Like, I don't know, there's no solution left. You guys took away my alcohol, you know, and now I can't cope with life. I couldn't deal with it. You know, I would take things really personally. I was super overreactive at everything and anything. I was unemployable. I was just a mess. And he talks to me one day. He goes, Kindred, why don't you get a sponsor? You know, they're really great. You know, it's like really helps me a lot. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, you know, because it, like working the steps and stuff, like my house is on fire and you guys are telling me to knit a sweater. Like, it just didn't make sense to me how this stuff was going to fix this, you know, like I have a real problem with money, you know, I have a real problem with like paying rent this month. Like, how am I going to do this? And how am I going to get a job? And how am I going to, and like getting a sponsor and reading this book, like, how is that going to do anything for me? You know, like, sure, it'll be nice, you know, just to hang around somebody, but, and so I was like, well, you know, we get desperate enough, I think, you know, and I got desperate enough, and I went to the Christmas party, and I seen a woman there that may or may not be in this room, and she was, you know, I recognized her from when I was a little girl. My dad sponsored her first husband, and she used to come to my little birthday parties and stuff growing up, and I was like, oh my God, and I looked at her, and she was like glowing, you know, like there was this light around her or something, you know, she had this like God glow. She was beautiful and laughing and surrounded by women and just, you know, joyous, and I looked at her and I was like, okay, that's the one, you know, and I asked her to be my sponsor, and thank God for proper sponsorship. She didn't waste no time, you know. She was like, okay, let's meet Tuesday. We'll get right into the literature. We're going to be reading, you know what I mean? It was just like, bam, no like calling and check in and tell me your story. I mean, not that I don't, you know, I don't judge how people sponsor or whatever, but I needed a solution right then. I couldn't wait around any longer. I had been sitting around here getting crazy, you know, and I didn't need anything more about like what I had to offer. I needed some kind of something to fix what was I was feeling. It was just like unmanageable, this powerlessness and unmanageability that I was experiencing sober, you know, and dry. You know, so step one, you know, the book has all these like things about, you know, the way that I was feeling. It talks about this restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, and I was always looking for this sense of ease and comfort. How are things going to be easier and more comfortable for me, you know, and I heard a speaker the other day, it was so great. She said, you know, if everything was so easy and comfortably done, you know, like if God just came in and said, oh, you got a problem, let me just yank that out of the way for you. Like, and so I just walked through life with never any problems, never any challenges, never any growth, never anything. Life would be pretty freaking boring, you know? And so it's kind of the full experience to like walk through stuff, you know, and get to the other side and see the lesson and be able to turn back around and say, oh, that's why all that happened, you know, that was that reasoning. And, you know, and so this restless, irritable, discontent, you know, I also like to throw in there, I was full of shame, guilt, fear, depression, and even suicidal. I mean, it was like this feeling of just torment that I couldn't stand. And you know, so my cycle was, and what it talks about in the doctor's opinion, is that I would get this obsession, and I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false, You know, I couldn't differentiate what was true and what was false. And now that I've been here around a while, the truth is here. You know, I get to hear other people's perception of what is actually happening with stuff instead of what my mind is telling me. My mind will tell me that people hate me, that I'm the victim, that, you know, you guys are all mean, whatever. It'll tell me this stuff. And then I'll drink, you know, because I'm backed into this corner, I'm isolated, and I can't understand why everybody hates me and all this, you know. And then I release this allergy, and then I keep drinking. And then some kind of consequence happens. I go to jail, whatever it is, and I emerge remorseful. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm so full of guilt. I can't believe I drank again. I meant to do right in the clean and sober house, or I meant to whatever. And I would emerge remorseful, and then I would make this firm resolution again. I'm not going to drink again. And then I would get restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, and the cycle would just happen over and over again. And so, you know, I started reading stuff like this, and it was like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't understand that before. I just thought I was just, you know, like I thought drinking just like made life more fun or made life possible. You know, I didn't understand that there was this cycle happening of alcoholism, you know, and so, you know, there's all these stories of the man of 30 and Jim and Fred and all these things that, you know, kind of describe all the ways that, you know, I thought, like, if I just learned what alcohol was doing to my brain, or if I just learned the lesson that I can't drink because of crankalankalus, you know, like, if I just had these reasonings, like, that would be enough to cure me, you know, that I would never drink again. Well, unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, that's not my experience. It's, you know, I need to be treated for this alcoholism. I need to be coming to meetings. I need to be working the steps. I need to be meeting with other people. I need to be making amends. I need to, all this stuff. But today I'm really grateful for that stuff. But I used to think, why would anybody have to do all that just to stop drinking? You know, like once you stop, that should be good enough. You know, and then we agnostics. So, you know, this idea of a spiritual solution to what I was facing, you know, is kind of it was kind of mind-boggling to me, you know. But once I started reading about, you know, these prejudices that I had about God, that God was Santa Claus and gonna just relieve me of things or whatever. Or punish me for doing wrong, and if I just need to like act right all the time because God's watching. You know, it's like I started throwing away these ideas based on experiences of trying new things differently. You know, and so I can remember things like I had really black and white thinking. You know, like I am invited to a birthday party and to a funeral or something, two things on the same day. How am I going to do it all? You know, and my sponsor would kind of teach me things like, you know, creative solutions. How about you stay here for a half hour and go here for another hour, or meet for this lunch for the birthday and then go to the, you know, or whatever. And like coming up with new ideas, you know, that maybe something like I can do more than just the black or the white. There's all this gray in between, you know. And so for me, learning spirituality, you know, is kind of the foundation in which I've built everything else. You know, it's kind of the thing. Like I read a lot of spiritual literature with my friend Sue and with sponsees and, you know, with a lot of people, and I get to see, you know, all these ways of looking at the same situation, you know. The spiritual experience talks about, like, we change our perception here, you know, and so I get to see situations differently. And right now I'm reading a spiritual book about, you know, things that happen to us that are hard or painful. And then we get to kind of like walk through them and see them as like there's something else spiritually going on with this. So my soul is trying to learn something. And so I'm going through this experience because my soul needs to have this lesson to keep moving on. And so things from like my childhood will be coming back up in my relationships today with other people, you know? And so like maybe, you know, whatever. And so just stuff like that, you know? And I never would have thought that that would help me cope with life. You know, I never thought that, you know, looking at things from a different angle and hearing other people's experiences with things. You know, this past year or close to it, our dad died. I got in a pretty horrific, traumatic car accident. The guy got out and started shooting a gun, and I was in the middle of a crossfire thing, and you know, and like I've been through breakups and got married and raised stepkids and, you know, like all these crazy experiences through sobriety. I mean, you stick around, you're going to be going through some stuff, you know. and doing it without drinking, like, and being able to still, like, get up and go to work and, you know, do our life, like, I kind of need something that's going to be looking out for me, that I can believe looks out for me. And I'm working with somebody as a, I call people my sponsee, and I hate that I do that, but because it's just another fellow that we're reading the book together, you know? It's not like I'm better than them or anything like that. It's just another woman that I read the book with, and she's completely atheist, you know? She has no, that's not her deal at all, you know? And I was like, how am I going to do this? You know, like, how am I going to share my experience without sharing about God, you know? And it's challenged me, and it was really scary at first, but it, you know, now I'm so grateful for that experience because I always talk about God, and that's not everybody's experience. And so how can I share more openly to be, you know, to be like, I think it's another level of spirituality for me. You know, it's like, I don't have to put my beliefs on somebody else. And people ask me like, how do you sponsor so many people? It's like, I don't control them. You know, I don't try to force my will on them or any of that kind of stuff. It's like, I meet with you, we read, and then call me if you need, you know, like that's it. I don't have to do a bunch of convincing you to be different or try things differently because I don't know the spiritual growth that you're going through. I don't know the spiritual journey that other people are on. I can't judge who's right and wrong. I can't tell you what you should do in this experience just based on my experience, but I can just share what my experience is, you know, and then take it or leave it. It don't matter, you know? And so learning that through, you know, the how and the why of it, like this whole part in step three and like trying to arrange life to suit myself, you know, I can still kind of get into that where it's like, I have this idea of how things should go in my day. This is how things should go. There's a certain routine. And if it's not in the routine, I get uncomfortable and uneasy, you know? And so this constant steps 10 and 11, pausing when agitated or doubtful, asking for the right thought or direction, you know, getting in touch with this intuition where I'm guided through life, that my only job is finding out what my higher power wants me to do right now, and that's it, and try to do that, you know, like, that's it. I don't gotta become super successful. I don't have to get on TV. I don't have to be a missionary in Africa. Nothing. It's just, what does God want me to do in this situation right now? And that's it, you know? It's pretty simple, but it's super hard, you know? And so when I sincerely take a position like that, remarkable things follow. And so I can remember having experience with the third step. I used to go to Don Brown meetings a lot. Like, I loved Don Brown meetings. And you know, at about 4 or 5 years, me and the guy broke up, the tattooed guy, or, you know, and we stayed friends. It's really weird, like, still going to AA meetings and seeing the person, you know, like, I always just cut people out of my life, you know, like, that's it, you don't, you're exiled, you know, and that's, you know, learning maturity here, like, how to just be okay with people that, you know, you have a falling out with or whatever, and still continuing to show up, and getting through that, you know, walking through that and growing through that, I got to see, like, this guy's cool, you know, like, I still love him, he's my friend, you know what I mean, and I got to see the other side of that, but initially it was, like, really hard and uncomfortable, you know, and I forgot where I was going with that. What was I talking about again? Oh, third step. Okay, so me and him broke up, and I was, like, kind of hurting for money, and my car was breaking down, and I didn't know how I was going to pay rent. My sponsee was mad at me, and, you know, and, like, all this stuff was happening this day, and I'm just like, oh, God, you know, and I wasn't paying attention that I had a job. I had this great relationship with an ex. I had people that I worked the book with. I had all these things. I had a car. I had a job. Anyways, I was spiritually sick that day, and I was like, you know, poor me, whatever, and I go to the Don Brown meeting, and we're on the third step, and we're walking through, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt, to relieve me of the bondage of, and so taking away my difficulties, right, all this selfish stuff, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power and thy love. He started breaking down what that meant, and that I'm going to live this life of service, and God is going to take care of all my difficulties, the selfishness and self-centeredness. God's going to take care of all that stuff, and I just need to, like, live this life of service, and, you know, I don't have to worry about all that stuff, you know, and this will be kind of like a demonstration, you know, for other people to see, you know, and so, like, the way he broke it down that night, I was like, I'm going to learn this third step prayer. I'm going to, like, memorize it, you know, and I'm going to just keep saying it and saying it and saying it. And I kept saying it until about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was really just humbled, and I could experience it, you know, I just felt it so deeply. And I know everybody here, we have those situations where we just feel that depth of God, you know, to me, God is an experience, and I just felt that connection, that everything was going to be okay, and I kept saying that prayer, and I went to sleep, and I wrote, before I went to sleep, I journaled it all out, I said, you know, here's all the difficulties, you know, here's all the stuff that's happening, and I go to work the next day, and my sponsee shows up, and she makes an amends to me, and me and the ex, we work together, and we had a deep talk and kind of closed the chapter and were able to kind of move on. And then I'm online and this, you know, email comes in, we'll fix your car, the government will, for free, if you just, you know, do this form. And, you know, and, like, all this stuff was just happening, you know, and I come back to the journal that night and I'm looking and I'm like, damn, every single one of these have been taken care of. And God provided, yeah, and I can't, you know, that doesn't always happen like that. I don't say, you know, say go home and say the third step prayer a lot, you know, but I got to feel what it felt like that if I'm just living this life of service, the stuff will take care of itself, you know, and so steps 4 through 9, you know, the fourth and fifth step, super powerful. If you haven't done it, do it. You know, but steps 6 and 7, once I found all these defects of character that were in this list, you know, I read the seventh step prayer one time, and I, you know, because I struggle. I shared already that jealousy was definitely an issue for me, and jealousy wouldn't go away. You know, I just, it wasn't like I was raging anymore or any of that kind of stuff, but it just was this uncomfortable feeling. And I'm reading this 7-step prayer, and it says, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And I'm, you know, when you think about that, though, God's going to remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of usefulness. So if it's still useful, it's not getting took, you know? And I'm going, you know, oh, so it's still useful somehow. And I don't know why, because I hate this defect. Like, it was blocking me from so much growth and so much experience. I couldn't go, like, kayaking because everybody's going to be in their bikini. Why would I do that? You know, it just blocked me from fun, you know? And so, you know, I was just desperate to have this defect removed. And so I ended up working the steps around it. And then it was removed. And then I started sharing about it in meetings. And women started coming up to me after the meeting and going, God, I really could relate. You know, I really struggle with that too. And then people started asking me to sponsor them. And they have this extreme problem with jealousy. And I'm going, oh, it was useful for this reason, so I'm able to share and help somebody else who's going through this, who's suffering from that. And even the mistakes that I've made in sobriety have been useful. Mm-hmm. They've been helpful to somebody. And, you know, I hate to say it, but there's, you know, a lot of us, we still got a lot of defects. And I look around and some of those defects I don't want. And so, you know, it's still kind of a lesson for me. Like, I don't want to act like that. You know, I don't want to be that way or whatever, you know. And so they're still useful, you know. And so that's why, you know, it kind of made sense to me. Like, sometimes I'm walking through stuff and I don't know why I'm just not better already. You know, I've been sober 18 years. I still am not perfect, you know, and because there's still some kind of lesson, some kind of purpose that's going to be used for it. Step 9, very powerful. I remember having a lot of fear doing the 9th step, and I still get a lot of fear doing 9th step. I'm in the midst of one right now where I have an old friend growing up. You know, I feel like the longer we stay sober, the more I recognize that I need to make more and more and more amends, you know, like my initial first list was like this long, you know, and then you think about it and then you go through experiences and I start to realize like things like even with dad growing up, I didn't realize till I was raising kids that sucked that I did that, you know? And like, I'm like, God, I was really a jerk, but I didn't see that until I'm raising kids. So a lot of times, like, things take a while, you know? And so I'm in the midst of one right now where I have a lot of fear and I'm starting to recognize that I need to make amends for this stuff to an old friend, you know? And so one experience was I had all this fear around making an amends to Raley's because I used to rip them off all the time. And, you know, I was hungry and they had food, so I'd steal it. And so I racked it up how much I actually owed Raley's, you know, and it was probably like $300. And, you know, I had all this fear, like, what am I going to do with my dog if they arrest me? What am I going to, how am I going to pay my rent if I go to jail? You know, like all this stuff, like, and I'm prepping up for it, you know, and I'm talking to people about it. And Don Brown, he said, I said, maybe I should just write an anonymous letter so I don't, you know, because I still got to be out here doing stuff, you know, and he says, would you want an anonymous letter if somebody ripped you off for $300? Or would you want the person to come to you humbly, face to face, look at you in the eye, and admit their their mistake, you know? And I was like, all right, fine. So I go to Rayleigh's and I ask for the manager and I make my amends. And he goes, where do you guys come from? You know, it's fine. It was like 10 years ago. Like, you know, we don't have the accounting for that. Just have a good day, ma'am, you know? And you know, and that's how a lot of my amends have been. It's like I make them up to be this huge thing, you know? And it's really not that big a deal. We're humans. We all make mistakes, you know? None of us are perfect. None of us get out of this thing alive, you know? And, you know, I love the history of AA. I love reading about, you know, Bill and Bob and their story and all the people that they've helped. And, you know, and Bob, after he got drunk again and relapsed, like, they didn't have him start over at step one when he came back in. They had him start right at 9. Like, he went right out and made his amends that night and never drank again. You know, and so I love learning that kind of stuff because when I want to help somebody else, I want to see how they did it, how what was successful for them, you know, and so now, you know, if somebody relapses or whatever, it's like, where did you leave off at in your step work? Let's start there. Let's just look at that stuff, you know, and that's just my kind of go, that's just how I do things is I like to read how things are done and try it, you know, and it's worked. I've had to make an amends with somebody that this woman that I slept with her boyfriend. Okay, so you know, I mean, it was a crazy, crazy day, and so I did that, and I seen her one time at a meeting, and she was, you know, shaky, and she was just coming in for the first time, and she recognized me, and she spent years, like, chasing me around, you know, like, trying to beat me up and stuff, and so when I seen her, I was like, oh my God, you know, and she was like, hey, Kindred, you know, and it had been years, and she's like, how's it going, and I was like, it's going okay, you know, like, what are you up to, you know, and she was like, you know, I don't really know anybody here, you know. You think I could have your number, just talk to you sometime? And I was like, yeah. You know, I'm like, should I give her my real number? Like, what? You know, and gave her my number. And she called me and she's like, hey, Kindred, I'm in this program and, you know, whatever. And I need a sponsor. You think you could sponsor me? And I'm going, huh. You know, well, firstly, I have some things I need to talk to you about, you know, but yeah. And, you know, I don't know what, like, spiritual things happen, you know, I don't know why I'm where I'm at a lot of times, but things like that, full circle moments happen all the time for me. And so, you know, I sponsored her I was trying to think of 10 and 11 story, but I don't know. I mean, there's just so much with my meditation stuff. And, you know, I love, you know, upon awakening and when we retire at night, you know, these things. And I love, like, just reading spiritual stuff and going to different meditation things and, you know, all these events and stuff that we do. And I went to, like, a Zen meditation thing with some friends, and we got kicked out of that. And, you know, and, you know, but two-way prayer has been so powerful for me, you know, learning from, you know, again, the history, but the Oxford group, you would write out, you know, your question to God, and then God, what you thought God was saying, you would write the response. And if it was, I mess this up sometimes, but if it's honesty, purity, unselfishness, or selflessness, selflessness and loving, that meant that that was a God, you know, God message. And so, And if it's not, because a lot of times the thoughts that come in for me are like, did you do your laundry? You know, it's like, oh my God, you got to be there in 5 minutes or whatever. And it's like urgent and rush and, you know, scary and fear. And then there's these thoughts that come in that are, you know, like, how about you love them? You know, a lot of my responses are love. How about you show love? How about you love them through it? How about you need to love them? You know, and it's like a lot of love and a lot of like forgiveness or looking at things like maybe this person just really needs to hear you, you know, or maybe you need to, you know, whatever. And that's the kind of messages that always line up with God. You know, and so trying to be kind and loving towards all the time, sometimes challenging, you know, but I know that that's always the answer when I do my two-way prayer. It always comes back to, are you being kind to them? Are you loving them? You know, and so learning these disciplines has helped this relationship with the higher power for me, that now God is like my best friend. God, I could talk to all the time. God is like, you know, I can see God in everything, you know, and step 12, working with others, you know, a lot of people that I work the steps with, I ask them early on, are you willing to work the steps with somebody else when we're done? I mean, you know, it's so crucial that we try to help other people in this way, because I don't think that I've ever learned this program the way that I've learned it until I was helping somebody else, until I was reading it with somebody else and hearing their stuff. And how can we work the principles around this situation that you're going through? And so learning that selflessness, I couldn't have done just being of service in other ways, like reading this literature and reading it through the eyes of what this person, how they're probably trying to understand this or whatever, made me learn and understand it deeper so that I could grow more, you know? And so if you haven't sponsored anybody yet, or if you're kind of in a slump, I mean, you're really missing out, because this is some powerful stuff. I can't remember when I started talking. I got like 5 minutes? Okay. So, you know, since working this program and since, you know, establishing and building this relationship with a higher power, you know, like I said, there's been a lot of stuff that I've experienced. I got sober, I was 19. Everybody's like, you're so lucky you got sober at 19. Like, if I would have got sober at 19. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and I got sober at 19. It's not all these, you know, rainbows and miracles that happen because you're young and got sober. Like, you know, I'm not like the president of a company, or, you know, like I haven't done all these things that, you know, or it could be viewed as, you know, successful or whatever. But what I've gained, I think that I've experienced by getting sober so young, is that I just have a lot more awareness. When I'm creating harms or things, you know, I don't have as much wreckage, I think, that some people have. I didn't raise kids through this disease, or I didn't whatever. I don't have as many years of amends to make. But, I'm still trying to figure everything out. I'm still growing up here. And a lot of times I think for me is like I feel like I should be farther than I am. I feel like I should be perfect by now. You know, I'm going to be 40. Like, you know, like, where's it all at? You know, and, you know, I got to experience, like, the gifts that I had and the person that I was meant to be, I really feel like I'm becoming, and I'm getting to share. So, like, things that when I was drinking, I was always, like, driving people around trying to find drugs for, you know, and selling drugs or whatever. And I know this is AA, but we've all done drugs. Shut up, you know. But, you know, and so, or finding alcohol and, you know, whatever. So, I did a lot of driving around and a lot of, you know, manipulating and trying to sell people on stuff, you know, and so in my career, I'm a truck driver and sell the containers that I transport. And so things like that, it's like the gifts that I've just initially always had, they're now be like I'm using them for good, you know, I'm using them for, you know, and trying to have like a business with integrity, you know, and like things like that. Like that's what this program's been able to kind of give me as far as like success or whatever. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought I would be like, you know, own a big house on a mountain someday or some ranch or something. And it's not that. It's like the things that I've had deep down inside of me have been kind of uncovered. And I heard somebody the other day, she said, in regards to sharing and helping other people, she said, you know, I recover loudly for those who are maybe dying silently. And for me, like, that's my experience, is that I just want to share this message, and I want to share, even out there, what these principles have done for me. You know, I think that when Bill started this deal, it wasn't like so we would just be in AA and just like be great here, you know. It was so we would go out to our community, and so we would go out to our jobs and to our other places in the world and share what this place has given us and help us share that message with other people that, you know, what does God look like for me is like, you know, I'm out there and I'm living right. I'm, you know, I'm at work, like people, you know, can you go the extra mile? Can you spend another 10 minutes here doing stuff? Yes, I can, you know, because I want to be helpful to society at large. I want to, you know, be altruistic. And, you know, my main problem was always self, you know, manifested in various ways. I had all these defects and self-centeredness and how my self-will was going to happen. And so the opposite of that is trying to be altruistic. You know, alcohol gave me the promises. The promises are also here. And I can, you know, only share that because of you guys. So, you know, I've worked the traditions and done a lot of service at group level and that kind of stuff too. And you know, I love that stuff. The traditions have really helped me in my relationships with other people. I'm kind of a believer in like trying to apply them to my personal life. So I can remember dating my husband and like I was just learning tradition 7 and he was like trying to buy me groceries and dinner or whatever, you know, like we went shopping and then dinner, and he was trying to pay for things, you know, and I was like, no, you're not going to pay for my stuff. I'm self-supporting, you know. And I think that that's really a gift though, because, you know, just like in AA, we can't, you know, be controlled by anybody, basically, you know, nobody can tell us what to do or how to do things. And in my relationships with other people, like my husband was like, what, you know? And I was like, you ain't going to control me, you know? You ain't going to be in charge of me, you know? And you know, but it's really, it's helped me in a lot of ways because I was always dependent in my relationships. I always needed the person, whoever it was, whether it was my dad or whoever, you know? I needed you to, like, take care of me. And then so unlearning that kind of stuff was always, you know, scary and uncomfortable. But now that I'm here, I could see why it was so important because I get to live the way that I want to live today. I get to, you know, roll my pants up high and, you know, look the way that I can do whatever I want today. You know, I have that freedom. And with freedom comes responsibility. you know? So I also got to do the things that help me be free. And so I want to just close out with the promises before the third step, as I always do, but I love them so much. Where is it? It's the ripped part of my book, I know. Okay, so the first requirement, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Thanks. Yay. I don't know. I don't know what time I was supposed to go. Okay, good.